Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg. All sports.
Sidney Crosby, the golden goal!
All the time. The following is a special Sports Radio 1290 presentation. Insight, analysis, and opinions on all things hockey. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at www.sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my good friends Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollock. Michael Remus is in the studio next to us operating the R desk, and we'll hear from Remus later on in the show. Gentlemen, good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Drew. I'll step right in here. It's good to be here, and I promise that no matter how bad things get, we won't rack up, rack pun intended, 370 penalty minutes here.
So you're not the New York Islanders, and I'm not the Pittsburgh Penguins?
No, it won't get. There's no way it'll get to that point.
Okay, and of course, we'll be discussing that coming up in a few minutes' time. It was Goon Night last night in the NHL. Richie, some opening thoughts from yourself.
About the Goon Night?
Just in general. You can talk about what's on your mind.
It's actually been, you always say an action-packed week. It really has been an action-packed week. There's been fighting, there's been injuries, there's been trades. I mean, there's no lack of things to talk about this week, and I'm pretty pumped up. Although I'm only here for the 2 hours today, Drew.
Only here for the 2 hours. Do I have this correct? You're leaving at 11 to go film a documentary about indie girls and the guys who love them? Is that right? Did I get that accurately?
You just throw me right under the bus right away, huh?
Right away.
It's 9:01 and you're already throwing me under the bus. I can't imagine what's going to happen at 11:01
you won't be here to defend yourself. It'll be much more fun for me.
Richie, you're going to the Titanic exhibit, right?
Which one? There's two of them in town. Because, it's not enough that there'd be one Titanic exhibit at a time.
What's the other one? There's one at the MTS Center Exhibition Hall.
And there's one at the
Manitoba
Museum.
Ezzy, when you get engaged, these are the things that you look forward to.
Is that a shot at me?
By the way, Drew, what did you think of Bed Bath & Beyond... That story.
He's not sure if he has enough time.
Is that something that excites you?
I have a big Saturday afternoon ahead of me, Bed Bath & Beyond, maybe a little bit of Home Outfitters, Not sure if there's enough time.
I was kind of like...
And I'm definitely going to bring my green hat.
I'm definitely a very proud Winnipegger, but I was, I saw that story and I was like, this is as bad as when it was announced that Hooters was coming to Winnipeg and it was like a story.
What are you talking about? You were standing out on Portage and Main celebrating like we won the gold medal when that happened.
Actually, this is a story that I don't know if I should be sharing right now.
Stop right now.
For my 60th birthday, my grandmother actually took me to Hooters. I'm not even joking. That was. She asked me where I wanted to go and I went to Hooters. It was great.
My grandmother, when she was in Minneapolis, bought me a Hooters t-shirt thinking it was owls. And he gave it to me.
And my dad once bought me a shirt that said, "I'm not a doctor, but I'll take a look." Let's start with last night in the NHL. Big win. The New Jersey Devils are an unbelievable story at this point in time. They won on home ice.
Oh, because they're trying?
Well, yeah. It's unbelievable. At this point in time, even though, they're not going to make the playoffs. Would it surprise you guys if they did it, the way they're playing recently?
Hold on a second. Yes. I've actually crunched the numbers. Based on previous years of information, I've actually crunched the numbers, and if the Devils did finish, they've got 27 games left, I believe, after last night. If they basically win at in between 750 and 800, basically 75%, if they won 75% of their games, which would be about 21 out of their last 27, they could make the playoffs based on how many points were required last year. So it's not going to happen, but it's
a hell of a run they're making.
In the day and age of the three-point game, it's virtually
that's the problem
impossible for them.
That's the problem, is that there's just so many teams ahead of them. That
for example, they play the Leafs a couple nights ago.
Yeah.
It's an awful game, by the way.
Yeah.
This is like watching paint dry. And Kovalchuk scored in overtime on Reimer. And the truth is, Ezzy, that's a big win for the Devils. They're 2 points, and obviously they won last night. But you play the Leafs, you win in overtime. The Leafs are ahead of you in the standings, they get a point.
That's right.
So that's how it's so hard.
That's right. You have to. That's what makes it so much more difficult. Anyways, last night in New Jersey, they beat San Jose 2-1 on home ice. Scoreless through two periods, and the Devils had scored two in the third, and the Sharks only had one. 2-1 win.
As you can speak to this, when you have a Jacques Lemaire system and the guys are playing where they're supposed to be playing, and everything in the defensive zone is to the outside, and everything in the neutral zone is very organized, and offensively you never have your center's high, almost always high in the Jacques Lemaire system, and you have you basically have two guys in deep at most at all times. you really make the other team make mistakes, and you capitalize on them. And that's what happened. Like, they're not going to win 6-5 games, guys, in 2-1 games. 2-1 against the Leafs, I believe. 2-1 against the Sharks. That's Jacques Lemaire hockey.
Speaking about a team that scored 6 goals last night, and one of the more impressive performances, Detroit went into Boston to really beat up the Bruins 6-1. The Bruins just came out flat. They didn't have anything. Tuukka Rask with a terrible giveaway in his own zone. I mean, the Red Wings just pounced on the Bruins, litany of mistakes and destroyed them on home ice.
Yeah, I think right now Detroit is playing like they have their home playoff date already set.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised now with all these injuries to Vancouver that they really give them a push for first. But last night was just Detroit bringing their A game, and Boston. Boston's been great. They've been one of the most consistent teams in the East, like we've talked about. But yesterday, Detroit kind of just, they're healthy now. They've got Datsyuk back. Datsyuk had, I believe, two assists last night again. So they're healthy now, except for, of course, Stewart.
And Detroit possesses the puck and has a fair amount of good skaters. And as Boston is a structured team, they're slow. Overall, they're not a very fast team. And when you don't have the puck and you're not a fast team, trouble. That's not a good matchup for Boston at all.
No. Atlanta got off the schneid last night. 3-2 victory over the New York Rangers in Atlanta. Big win for the Thrashers. A game they needed to have.
It's like a road game, too, and, teams like Atlanta play against,
Rangers. Every home game that they play is like a road game.
Yeah, but that's a good win.
Either that or it's like an empty arena game. It's one of the two.
And that's a good win for Atlanta, turning around. Evander Kane gets 2 goals. He's on pace for 25, as I read this morning. You'll have to take that one. The Rangers, those are games that, obviously, those are tight ones. You're not going to...
In Dallas last night, the Blackhawks jumped out to an early first period 3-0 lead, ended up blowing the lead, lost in a shootout to the Stars 4-3.
Marty Turco's return to Dallas and didn't go as well as he had.
Well, it went well for the first period. Unfortunately, it's a 3-period game. Going to St. Louis last night, Minnesota beat St. Louis 5-4 in a shootout. Surprising that both those teams could total 9 goals.
Surprising they could both total 9 goals, but those are two teams that are moving sideways at the time. St. Louis is slowly moving up, but the teams aren't going to be a threat this year.
And then last night, Peter Forsberg finally got his immigration documents in order, made his long-awaited return to the NHL. Really, a return that in the last 2 weeks came out of nowhere. Unfortunately, the Avalanche continued to lose. They lost 3-1 to the Blue Jackets. I appreciate Forsberg coming back, but he's coming back to a team that doesn't seem to have a hope of making the playoffs this year.
It's not even that they don't have a hope right now. I think that they've. I think it's more so that they're playing their worst hockey of the year. I mean, Peter, It was great last night to finally see Peter Forsberg back out there. He looked better maybe than some people thought he was going to look. He didn't get any points or anything like that.
But nice pass to Duchesne up front.
I wouldn't say Colorado doesn't have any hope, but they're beginning to lose the little bit of hope that they have, because out of all of the teams in the West that we were talking about and that maybe would have a bit of a slide. The slide that Colorado's taken, or the fall that they've taken, is very surprising. Right now they're, I believe, in second last behind, just ahead of Edmonton.
That's right. Well, they're not just ahead of Edmonton, but they're sixth. Well, but they're second last
just
in the
ahead
Western Conference.
In the sense of standings. But when you look at the top injuries, Mueller and Stewart, and then you look at Fleischmann, who came over from Washington. And, if you look at all the way their season's gone, they've kind of lost the momentum that they had, and all of that momentum that they kept losing, kept finding back, because the Avalanche have always managed in the last 3 years, have managed to have these guys, a lot of American college guys, come up from the AHL and fill roles. But I mean
they lost six in a row. They're
doing everything here.
Six in a row, they're 8 points out of the playoffs right now. Yeah. Fleischmann, you make a good
Craig
point.
Craig Anderson just left the team for a personal matter. So I mean, there's their goaltender, right? So, I mean, you're riding up Peter Budaj right now.
Right, and that's obviously a factor there. But, the young defense is a factor as well. But you look at the forwards, and I realize Fleischmann's done that, so that's a huge injury. He was playing basically a point a game since he got there. But Chris Stewart hasn't been the same since he got injured in the fight. And that's an issue that Colorado management will probably speak to him about continually for the next little while. Because he was playing the best hockey of his career at that point. Big, strong, fast, nose for the net. And so you look at the talent up front, and you still have, Duchesne and Stasny up the middle. That's a great one, too. You add in Forsberg, you have Stewart, you have Hayduke. This is a team that there's a lot of talent still there. The depth isn't there in terms of the third and fourth lines, really. And then the back end is kind of lacking, that shutdown guy. Adam Foote used to be that guy, but he's not anymore. And you guys said it. If there's no goaltending there, too, then this is a team still looking good moving forward with all the young talent, but
step back this year is all. Fun game last night in Calgary. The Flames finally lost the game. They lost in overtime. They lost 5-4 to Anaheim. But just a really fun game. Lots of speed, lots of action. Just, two teams that are you know, the Flames have been playing well. And, of course, we're going to be joined by George Johnson of the Calgary Herald coming up later on in the show to talk about the recent Calgary Flames hot streak. But those are two teams making Northwestern Conference. You know, Anaheim, a big trade this year. This week added Francois Beauchemin. We'll talk about that next segment. These are just two teams that are going to be very interesting to watch going forward in this season.
It's funny. You watch the end of that game, and you're like, Cam Fowler, he's making a case for the Calder Trophy right in front of me.
Yeah.
I mean, that goal in overtime last night was unreal. That was a playoff goal. That was one of those goals where he kind of just got a burst of speed, and no one in Calgary was really expecting that. But, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, yesterday, 2 points were stolen from Calgary. Calgary should have won that game.
When you're winning 2-0 with, you know, 2 minutes, sorry, by a goal with 2 minutes left, you have to win the game, obviously, and you're fighting for a playoff spot against a conference rival who's basically in the same position you are. You're exactly right, Ezzy. You got to win that game.
And then what turned out to be the most newsworthy game of the night was a goon fest in Long Island last night. I mean, the Islanders destroyed the Penguins on the score sheet, 9-3, and in this game they just went at each other. Well, I mean,
old school.
Old school hockey is one way to put it. I mean, it was more than just old school. It was goon fest. It was 1970s. You have expected Mike Milbury to jump into the crowd to beat somebody with a shoe, like he used to do at the Boston Garden.
But we spoke about it off air before the show, Drew, and I wonder if there's mayhem and they were going at each other. But the Islanders really targeted Maxim Talbot for a hit he put on Blake Comeau the last time these guys played. And I was speaking to you about it. You know, obviously, everybody's going to be out saying this is dirty hockey. There's no place for this in the game, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But if the NHL's not going to police dirty hits and headshots, if they're going to, as Larry Brooks in the New York Post last week wrote about how the PA is going to try and limit the suspensions because of the cost to the Players Association and because of the out-of-pocket money to the player for being suspended. And the NHL is really going to give it a 4-game or a 5-game. And obviously, they're getting stiffer with their suspensions, but still there's progress to be made. Maybe the players have decided, because it's happened a couple of times this week, maybe the players have decided as, hey, we're going to police ourselves. So they went at Maxim Talbot, not once last night, not twice, 3 times. And let me ask you this. Do you think Maxim Talbot is going to think twice next time? Because he got pummeled a couple of times. Do you think he's going to think twice about making that Blake Comeau hit again?
Probably, if he knows that he's going to get, it's not just going to be a suspension potentially, but that the opposition are going to target you and try and injure you. I mean, these were attempts to injure. When was the last?
Well, one of them was extremely. The sucker punch was extremely dirty on Talbot.
Yeah, it was Bertuzzi and Steve Moore. Very close to that. But I mean, you got Brent Johnson. When's the last time? We've gone years without seeing a goalie fight.
Yeah.
Brent Johnson fought twice last night.
Well, Brent Johnson has for sure taken over the goalie heavyweight title from Ray Emery. I mean, Emery had two fights.
Yeah, Emery took it over for Kluche.
But last night, wasn't that a perfect example of, the players taking care of business on ice? I mean, these suspensions, Richie, they're going to continue to be the same. Cook got 4 games recently. Cook's already been suspended before. Nothing's going to change. I think the most we'll ever see, with the exception of, a Marty McSorley on Donald Brashear type of thing, we'll continue to see 4 to 6 games. We're not going to see 10 games, which would probably take out headshots for good if these guys started getting 10 instead of 4.
Which Eric Goddard will get now because he took off the bench.
Yeah, Eric Goddard's going to be gone of the Penguins. Came off the bench because...
I wouldn't be shocked, by the way.
Brent Johnson was getting attacked.
I wouldn't be shocked if he was just sent out because Eric Goddard's not going to do anything for you in terms of on-ice productivity, and he's a fighter who you can replace easily.
That's right. He'll be gone for 10. I think it's a minimum of 10 for leaving the bench.
Yes. It's the first time he probably was on the ice all game anyways.
Yeah, you're going to see a ton of suspensions coming out of this. I see multiple over 5-6 games for a lot of the guys here.
Chaos. I don't think we're going to see a lot of suspensions from that.
Yeah, I agree.
We'll see maybe 2, Drew.
You don't think you're going to see more than that?
Goddard.
Well, Goddard's automatic for leaving the bench.
Goddard and Haney for the bench. Martin.
Haney. Was Haney for the bench?
No, Matt Martin.
Was Martin?
Sucker punched.
Okay, so Martin.
Talbot. So those two. That's it.
You don't think there's going to be more?
No.
Well, then if there's not going to be more, then what you've seen is the NHL just pretty much saying, we're abdicating responsibility, which is fine if they choose that.
It's not a bad
way to go. The player is going to say, okay, look, we want to suspend you guys, but your Players Association says, no, we don't want you to suspend it. We're going to take a step back. You guys fight it out.
Yeah.
Brawl to the finish, brawl to the death. We don't care. It's going to be a return to 1970s hockey.
So long as it's consensual.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it's going to be. I mean, if that's the line that's been drawn in the sand, then, so be it. We'll see what happens. When we come back after the break, we're going to recap the three big trades in the NHL. It's almost like the trade deadline is underway. So we'll recap the three big trades in the NHL from this week. Much more still to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 9:15 this Saturday morning. We're here with you till noon today. We have a big show coming up. Still to come, we're joined by our good friend Gabe Desjardins from BehindTheNet.ca. We're going to be doing our statistically speaking segment with him at 10:30. Coming up after that from the Calgary Herald, George Johnson at 10:45. Damian Cristadero of the St. Petersburg Times at 11. And then at 11:30 this morning, Director of Corporate Communications and Hockey Operations for the Manitoba Moose, Scott Brown, will be joining us. Big night at the MTS Center tonight. It's the Mike Keane retirement. They're retiring Mike Keane's jersey. And so we'll be joined by Scott Brown later on to talk about that. And, of course, all the latest news and notes in the hockey world. If you want to join in on the conversation, you can tweet us at Illegal Curve on Twitter. Become a friend of ours on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. You can always call in to the program, 780-1290, 780-1290, if you have something you want to talk about in the hockey world. And if you're more inclined to just send your messages by typing, join the Illegal Curve chat going on at www.illegalcurve.com. Michael Remus is manning the R desk and wants you to join him there. Otherwise, he gets very lonely.
You choked up on your words there,
I choked up on my words there
a little. How lonely bit, yeah. Remus is.
I know, exactly. I felt such sympathy for Remus that I choked up a little bit. Let's start with the trades that occurred in the NHL this week. Three big trades. Really, you can see that the start of the trade deadline season is underway. And, of course, a reminder, Monday, February 28th, NHL trade deadline day, we will be on the air with a special edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from 2 p.m. till 7 p.m., recapping the entire trades, the day in hockey. It's going to be a crazy day. At least we hope it's going to be a crazy day. And we'll be here from 2 to 7 recapping the day in trades in the NHL. Let's start with the trade between the Anaheim Ducks and the Toronto Maple Leafs. Francois Beauchemin goes back to where he once came, that being Anaheim, traded back to Anaheim in exchange for Joffrey Leupel and some other players we'll discuss as we get into the trade. Let's start with the two big names, Beauchemin, Leupel. What do you think? What do you like? Who's the, if you want to assess a winner early on, who wins this deal?
I think you can kind of assess this winner as it being somewhat of a win-win deal. If I had to overall, I don't necessarily like the winner or loser in every single trade. In this trade, I think both teams have, there's some benefit in it for both teams. But there also is, there's a certain detriment level to the Leafs more so than to the Ducks. So I think for the Ducks, I'd probably give them a little bit better of a grade, but they're also in a better situation, you know what I mean? So the Leafs are in a poor situation in terms of dealing. They're dealing from a weakness, and the Ducks are dealing a little bit more from strength. So I think the Ducks probably did a little bit better, but the Leafs didn't do poorly here. Now, in terms of Joffrey Leupel, I mean, he's at most a second-line right-winger. He's a floater for the most part. He's a pretty big guy. He's not physical. He can skate, but he's not the best skater in the world. He's not the fastest skater, sorry. He's got a good shot, and he's pretty good at picking spots to pop in and out of. But is he difference maker? No. I mean, is he consistent? No. He'll be a scorer. He's not a great passer, and he's limited. So I mean, when you're paying a guy who's limited 4.25 for this year, for next year, and for the year after, you have to think to yourself. You know,
that seems to be the big sticking point that I would have for the trade from a Leafs perspective. Granted, this is a team in desperate need of, they're a team in desperate need of talent, but you're paying almost over $4 million for the next 2 years for this talent. Is he worth the money?
No, of course he's absolutely not worth the money. He's not very good. But Ezzy, this is the point. What the Leafs are doing now is they're taking on bad contracts to get prospects. They're dealing from a position, a weak position right now. And that's why they wanted Jake Gardner. He's the main guy in this deal.
Well, let's talk about Jake Gardner.
He plays at Wisconsin. He's a defenseman. I haven't seen him play from what I've read. Or he's played at the World Juniors, but I haven't really noticed him watched him with a close eye. He is a defenseman. He's apparently a former forward. He's a good skater. Got a pretty good shot. Bob McKenzie, puts him out as maybe a third or fourth defenseman if he maxes out his career, who's a second power play guy. Good. Obviously a guy who will be cheap, who's an entry-level player. At the same time, you're taking on this huge salary that eats into your cap space moving forward. We haven't even talked about the Beauchemin loss.
But Richie, I think when you mentioned that Toronto's dealing from a weakness and Anaheim is dealing from a strength right now, I think that's really important here, because if you look at this trade if you look at this trade on, you know, a sliding scale right now, I think you'd have to give Anaheim the edge. I agree with you on that because Boschman won the cup in Anaheim, and now Boschman goes back to a better defense, actually. On paper, Toronto's defense actually might be stronger than Anaheim's. I mean, this is the post Chris Pronger, Scott Niedermayer defense where basically Visnovsky, Ludman, and Fowler are logging all the big minutes, right? But if you look at this now, looking in the future, because Toronto actually needs a top six forward, maybe next year, you know, this trade won't be that bad. But right now, I think that's the key. Toronto, dealing from a weakness, makes this move because they're thinking, well, we get Lupo, contract's not very good, but we know that, you know, he'll serve a top six role for us next year.
Will he serve a top six role?
Yeah, he will on this team. Yeah.
Is he an actual top six talent, though?
He can be a second-line right winger, Drew, not a first-liner. I mean, you know, a second-line right winger, if you're on the depth chart 1-6, he's six. You know what I mean by that?
Sure.
So
he's on a bad team, he's a six. On a good team, he's probably a seven or an eight.
Maybe. I mean, lots of teams don't necessarily have that scoring talent on. You know, I mean, he's a top 10 pick, and obviously that was a fair amount of time ago. But if a guy's been traded that many times, you know,
but in
Anaheim,
this season,
Edmonton, Philly.
This season,
Philly,
he's coming
Anaheim.
Back from a horrible injury, though. I mean, that's huge. How many guys? It's not like Lupo missed a year.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not like he's coming back from a broken toenail here, you know?
He doesn't deal well with the media. Didn't deal well with the media in Edmonton. Granted, he's from Edmonton, but that was, and there was a lot of pressure because he was part of the Pronger trade. But he seems like, as far as we can tell, not very comfortable in front of the camera. And the first game he played in Toronto, we probably had more cameras and microphones in front of him than during his entire second tenure with the Ducks. In terms of Boschman, though, Drew, the key is a couple of things. First of all, he was probably the Leafs' best defenseman prior to the trade. And he didn't make his mistakes, but their defense isn't very good. So they lose probably their best defenseman. Forget the Leafs this year because they're a write-off. All right?
Yeah.
You move over to Anaheim, as he's exactly right. You have the minute-eating guys right now. Vishnovsky, puck mover. Lidman, you know, can move the puck a bit. Good, solid stay-at-home defenseman. Fowler, puck mover. Boschman, you know, kind of can do both. That solidifies your top four. You're Anaheim. You maybe trade a prospect, but you have to understand the value that, you know, what kind of value do they attach to him? Fowler is their future number one guy, right? So are they even sold on him? You have to think about that internally.
Gardner, you mean. I mean,
and then you look at Boschman, though, Drew, quickly. You look at Boschman. He's only got two more years on his contract. He's 30 years old. Two more years. So the contract is just this year and next. He's at $3.8 million cap it. So you're paying less to Boschman, who's better than Lupo, and you're paying it for less term. And you have him popping up for UFA status when some other guys you may want to re-sign are popping up for UFA status. And you solidify your defense now. It's a pretty good trade for Anaheim. For the Leafs?
The Leafs, it depends on Gardner.
Exactly. Because if Gardner doesn't really turn out to be much, and he's a 5-6 guy, you know, there'd be some value there. But Lupo's just, you know.
Gardner was an 08 draft pick, an 08 first overall draft pick.
Round draft pick. First overall.
No, sorry, first round draft pick, 17th overall in 2008. He's 20 years old now. You know, they say that, you know, if you ask, you know, Bob McKenzie tweeted about it, said, you know, skating is a bit of you need to get bigger.
Skating's a good skater, but he's not big enough yet.
Right, he's not big enough yet. I mean, he's 20 years old. You would sort of expect him to, you know, he's done in college almost. He's probably,
this is the point, though, Drew. Are they going to put him in the AHL and let him develop, or are they going to rush him like they rush Kadri?
First of all, they don't have the benefit to keep waiting for him to develop. They don't have the benefit to keep trotting out these terrible teams. You know, next
year they have the benefit.
You think next year they still have the benefit?
Well, they have the first round pick next year.
Well, I'm saying, I think at some point in time, with their defense. I mean, look at the Leafs' defense going forward to next year. I know it's hard to prognosticate into the future, but I mean, the defense next year is nothing to, it probably needs him an 08 draft pick to step into the lineup at that point, even if he's not ready.
Gaberle's gone.
Komisarek,
Phaneuf, and the overpaid team.
Yeah.
Luke Shen and a new salary, and then a bunch. You know, all these something they're trying to work into the top four right now. He's a stay-at-home defenseman. He was part of that Phaneuf trade. The defense isn't very good. They're overpaying Phaneuf. They're overpaying Komisarek. You know, Caberle is going to, in my opinion, flourish on the next team he's on. And they're going to not regret moving him. They're going to regret not moving him years ago, this summer, last year the trade deadline.
Ryan Burke has... Because it's been about 2 years that we've been talking about them trading Thomas Caberle for.
Ryan Burke has mishandled that situation to levels beyond me.
There's some talk that they might not even trade Caberle come the trade deadline.
Yeah, because he has control now. Because
I mean, that's mind-boggling that they could manage to lose an asset on a team that's not going anywhere.
Let me ask you.
Yeah.
How did that turn out for Ottawa? losing significant parts of your team to UFA status for nothing.
Well, I mean,
see Zdeno Chara, see Wade Redden. I realize Wade Redden's a boss, but see all those guys.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, but I mean, the thing is, for Ottawa, it wasn't so long ago that they made a cup run.
You know, Toronto doesn't have that luxury. They have to move Cabrera, or they have to basically only not move him because he doesn't want to go to one of the teams.
But they gave him all the leverage.
That's exactly right.
Like, that's the problem. You knew you were going to be bad this year. I know we've spoken about this issue ad nauseum. But you knew you were going to be terrible this year. Why did you let him take all the leverage? Why didn't you trade him to begin with? Unless they're going to re-sign him.
They're not going to re-sign him. He's not going to re-sign there. Whatever you would have got for him this summer would have been more than you're going to get for him in 10 days.
Especially because you might not get anything for him because he has the right to veto anything that you want to do.
Right.
So, I mean, granted, I mean, you would think that, well, it depends where he would potentially go. And, I mean,
I'd say East Coast, apparently, is where he wants to stay.
Well, I don't foresee him wanting to get shipped to the West Coast at this point in time. Yeah. It just depends on, you know, what team is going to and what they're going to pony up. But, yeah. I mean, they know that Toronto's got
no
leverage.
It's not going to be a first-round draft pick.
It certainly won't be because they have no leverage. Right. Yeah. I think they're going to lowball as lowball can be. And, I mean, why wouldn't they? Wouldn't an opposing
It's a first-round pick.
It'll
be a very low first-round pick.
I don't think it'll be a first-rounder.
Most likely it won't be. There's a slight possibility it could be.
Well, that would be very surprising. I mean, if it was a first rounder, that would be, to me, very surprising. Of course, we're going to talk about, when we come back after this commercial break, a team that did get a first rounder, and that's the Ottawa Senators trading Mike Fisher. Stay tuned to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're going to break down the Mike Fisher trade right after these commercial messages. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 9:30 in the morning on Saturday morning. Come join the conversation. Join us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Join us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Join us in the Illegal Curve chat room at www.illegalcurve.com. Michael Remus is manning the R desk, and he wants to hear what you have to say about in the world of hockey.
Drew, you can play that song on guitar, right?
I actually can't play guitar. Piano.
I think you can play that song on guitar. I've heard you play that song on guitar.
No. You must be thinking of somebody else, some other Drew.
I know other Drews, but I don't talk to other Drews on a regular basis. Like, I know other people named Drew, Andrew, and just famous people also named Drew.
People named Drew?
Well, I talk to you, just you, though.
All right, I'm famous.
Nobody else.
Thanks for that.
There's Andrew, our friend Andrew McKinnon, but...
He plays guitar.
Yeah, he plays in the Patty Kicks.
I don't call him Drew. That's right. You're the only person that I call Drew that I like it.
I appreciate that. Thanks, Ed.
Talk trade.
Can we talk about the Mike Fisher trade now, or do you want to keep going with it?
Oh, let's talk about it, baby. Okay. Music Town. Music City.
Music City. Mike Fisher of the Ottawa Senators sent to Nashville for a first-round pick 2011 entry draft.
And a free audition to 2011 Canadian Idol.
Can we just make the obligatory Carrie Fisher joke?
What's that?
Can we make the obligatory Carrie Fisher joke?
Sure, go ahead.
No, I'm just... Carrie Underwood would have taken his name.
She'd be Carrie. No,
Richie
Fisher.
Mike took her name, Mike Underwood. he should take her name.
In Nashville, he should. And course, in addition to the first-round draft pick, it's a conditional pick in the 2012 draft. That pick depends on how the Predators do in the playoffs this year. It could be a third or it could be a second-round pick. Mike Fisher is a nice player, but isn't Nashville already a team of Mike Fishers?
I think that in the sense that Nashville is a team of, it's a scoring by committee team for sure, and you know you're right, they are a team that's going to win, you know, they're going to win like they always win. They're going to win with good defense, great goaltending, and they're going to win games because they play a good team system. As far as this trade goes, though, I think Ottawa, as it stands now, we were talking about the last trade between Toronto and Anaheim and how maybe Anaheim has the edge, Richie. I think that Ottawa wins this trade because they're already going to get a high first-round pick, and now they just snagged a first-round pick for a guy who clearly wanted out. I mean, Mike Fisher wanted out of there.
I don't know that Mike Fisher wanted out of there. I mean,
she wanted
out of there. That's obvious.
He is she.
Yeah.
It's Mike Underwood now.
Well, yeah. Of course, Mike Fisher's wife, for those of you who don't know, is country music sensation Carrie Underwood.
I mean, you have her CD, right?
Actually, I'm more of a...
was she American Idol?
She was an American. Yeah. She did win American Idol. I'm more of a...
Remember, she looked like
Ruben Studdard. Before she looked like before the makeover?
probably not over. Not like she looks now.
Yeah.
I prefer this look, personally.
Yeah.
But what's the other girl, the other country singer's name? I think, wasn't she also an American Idol?
Okay, Drew.
The young
Drew, this isn't Entertainment Tonight Canada. Okay, let's get back to hockey talk here.
Anyways, Nashville's big weakness is scoring.
Yeah.
Does Mike Fisher help?
No, Mike Fisher's, you just said he didn't help.
I didn't say he didn't help. I think that...
I know.
I think that it's good for Nashville in the sense that they fill a role. He can be their number one center. He can. If you look at who they're playing at center, they've been playing Marcel Gotch as their first...
Well, that's because they lost Matthew Lombardi early in the year.
Lombardi hasn't played at all.
Yeah, I know. That's a concussion.
He was supposed to be their first over.
Let's talk about this team, though. I mean, you're adding Mike Fisher. Mike Fisher's career year was last season. He had 25 goals, 53 points. The guy's never had over 53 points in his entire career aside from last year, and he's 30 years old. So clearly he's on, you know...
A downward spiral.
Yeah, a slow probably downward spiral in terms of productivity. His cap hit is $4.2 million. You're paying $4.2 million for a guy who's never had more than 53 points in a season. You're exactly right, Drew, when you ask, is he a Nashville player? He is. He's a hard worker. He's a big body. He's tough to play against. He can skate. He's responsible on his own end. He can penalty kill. Mike Fisher doesn't have the hands necessary to put in, you know, to put up 30 goals.
He's got no hands.
No hands. And the truth is, Drew, is when you're adding him to that team, you're adding a responsible to it, but you're adding another Nashville Predator hockey player. Two-way, responsible player, just can't get it done in terms of scoring goals when you need to. You're adding a 50-point player for $4 million. To me, that's not a good value. Just not good value. David Poile does a really good job of drafting defensemen, developing defensemen. The organization does as a whole. But when it comes to paying forwards and it comes to making acquisitions, I generally don't agree with the move he made. This team needs to add something. It's not more reliable two-way players. You're adding more of the same. Give me a forward who can break the game through, who can score. I mean, remember, he was interested in Phil Kessel at the time, the Leafs traded for him. That kind of a guy is a guy that, you know, that kind of a scorer is the kind of guy that Nashville needs. They add Fisher, you know, is it going to take them, Ezzy, from a first-round team to a second-round team? Very possible, you know, possible, maybe very possible, but it's possible.
But it's not taking them from a second-round team.
That's exactly the point. That's exactly the point. Maybe there's value, and we'll talk to Gabe about it later. Maybe there's value in making that money from the gate in terms of the first round to the second round.
To me, this strikes me...
It's a marketing ploy, too, here.
Yes, let's not overlook this. This strikes me as ownership said to the general manager, Mike Fisher is on the market. We want Carey Underwood more than Mike Fisher. Pay what you need to pay to get Carey Underwood.
And you know what, Drew? If that's what they're doing, then...
They say it's good for marketing, check into it. Nashville says, hey, he's a good hockey player, and he's exactly what they want, Drew. So, you know, David Poile isn't exactly one to take a lot of risks. You know, he doesn't make any trades.
That's why, they can justify it from a hockey perspective.
Yeah, no, they can.
Because you're giving away a low first-round draft pick in what is supposedly a weak draft class.
Right.
So, you know, you can justify it that way. But to me... If this is your trade deadline move, if this is the big move you're making at the trade deadline, and it probably is because you don't have a first-round pick anymore,
right.
This isn't the move you need to make to put you over to the next level,
and
to make you a threat
third,
to the top of the Western Conference.
And the second and third-round picks that are conditional are now up in the air, right?
Yeah.
Can't trade the third-round pick that might be part of another deal.
That's right. You can't trade your 2012 second or third.
You can't make two trades involving the same pick.
Right. So that takes those off the boards as somebody, you know, you might want to trade, you know, to get a Dominic Moore or things like that were available.
A condition in the trade where the second round goes to next year. I'm not sure about that.
It's a 2012 second-round pick.
Okay, so...
It's a 2012, it's
2011 first-round pick.
2011 first-round pick and a conditional pick in 2012.
If you're Ottawa, though, you're rebuilding. You get rid of a center who's... paid $4.2 million cap it this year, who's, you know, in reality, you're not going to go to the cup, obviously. So you got a first round pick, what might be top five, might be first overall. You're adding in a first round pick from Nashville in the 18 to 22 range or 16 to 24 range. And that's a quick, you can get, you know, not a quick rebuild, but you can start the project early. The Leafs can't get anything. They can't get a first round pick for anything. The Sens go right out there and get one. Good job by Brian Murray. And he gets a conditional pick in there. I thought the trade was a good one by Brian Murray. Nashville, to me, more of the same. And I think that's not going to really change, you know, their ability to go far in the playoffs. And last week on the show, I said in the six things we learned this week, Nashville's got to start adding scorers because that's what they need. And they've added another defensively reliable two-way player.
Right.
And Drew mentioned that the 2011 entry draft might be a weak draft. But what about the 2011 trade market? I mean,
good point.
What else is there out there for Nashville. I mean, if you look at which teams are sellers right now, first off, there's only maybe three or four teams that you could actually say for sure know that they're sellers, because Calgary, for instance, was in 14th place three and a half weeks ago, and now they're in, what, eighth? So
you're right. There's not
the
a
teams,
lot of
the
sellers.
Teams that they're trading with Drew have diminished. So if you think about what Nashville could have got on the trade market, I mean, it's arguable that they really that top line guy that could change the team, like a Phil Kessel. I mean, who else really is there out there that it's known to be on the trade market? I mean, you've got,
well, Ottawa's going to rip apart their team, and they should.
They should.
And they can do a quick rebuild based on the scenario, the situation that they're in at the moment. They already have two first
round picks. They're not trading Jason Spezza, which, if you think about it, that's the guy that Nashville really needs, is Jason Spezza.
Yeah, well,
not Mike Fisher.
You know, Jason Spezza, but you know, you trade at this point in time. You trade Milan Mihalik if you can. You rebuild this from top to bottom.
You can't trade Milan Mihalik.
Well, you know what? Why not? You trade, I mean, Chris Phillips, you expect, is going to be gone. He's a UFA after
Phillips
this season.
Phillips is gone.
Phillips is gone. I mean, now he won't, I don't think he'll fetch as much as Fisher because he's not a, because he's a UFA.
He's a UFA. He's
a rental.
Second rounder.
He'll get you a second rounder.
But we're talking about Nashville's need for a Phil Kessel type of 1A forward, right?
There isn't one on the market.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I'm saying,
so all the guys you're talking about are guys that are just going to complement an already deep team.
But if you look at it from Ottawa's perspective, they have the chance to do a quick rebuild here. If they get rid of all their players that they should be on the market, they can accumulate a lot of draft picks.
Right, and
they can do the rebuild if they can draft properly.
And you have, you know, Jared Cowan in the system, and you have Robin Leonard they're bringing up obviously right now, and you have Erik Karlsson, and there are some young pieces there. Kovalev will be dealt.
Phillips will be gone.
Jarkko Ruutu will probably be traded. There was talk that Vancouver might be interested in him for their fourth line.
I think Chris
Shannon might even be traded. They'll trade everybody who's going to be a pending UFA, even pending RFA.
Well, Chris Campoli could go potentially.
That was a nice trade for that. Remember that first round pick for him? Was a stupid
Well, they have
trade.
To have some players to finish the season. Let's not forget about that.
Why? Thing. You can call up your A. Where are they?
Yeah, call up Billy Butlers.
They're not trading
great
seven guys.
NHL.
Yeah.
Trade three of those guys. Ruutu, Phillips. Phillips, and who's the other one?
The truth is, Ezzy, the replacement players in the AHL, replacing those guys, are as good as them. A lot of those guys are junk.
Yeah.
Kovalev, Phillips, and Ruutu, in my mind, are the three guys that for sure go.
I think Ruutu goes as well.
Kovalev, Ruutu, Phillips.
If you can start accumulating a lot of draft picks, you're doing okay there. Let's quickly go over another interesting trade, and we'll talk to Gabe Desjardins later on about this trade. That's the Michael Frolik trade going to Chicago in exchange for Jack Skilly.
And others.
I mean, there's others involved in here, and I really think the sort of the wild card in that trade might be the goaltender the Blackhawks acquire, and that's Alexander Salek, who's tearing up the Swedish Elite League this year. Seems to me that Florida traded, it seems like they got the worst player in the deal.
I'll focus more so on Frolik here than Salek. I mean, Salek's 24. Goalies can mature at a later date, and they're unpredictable. You know, Jonas Gustafsson was pretty predictable, was pretty solid in his work in Sweden. So who knows how Salek will produce in the North America. But in terms of Frolik, Frolik's a big guy. He's got really good vision. I really love his passing skills. He's got a lot of talent. He can handle. He can skate. He can do a lot of things. He's a toolsy player, as they'd say. Skilly couldn't really put the puck in the net in Chicago, and that was his downfall. Jesterman is an AHL player, and David Pekan is a sixth-round pick. So right now, I thought Chicago did well. Remember, Frolik doesn't even make that much money.
He's
0.875 this year in terms of getting paid.
He's only 22 years old.
The bonus cushion is 1.2. I thought they'd give up on him too early, and I think that Frolik is the best player in this trade, better than Jack Skilly in terms of talent. And Salek, I haven't seen. The other guys, I don't think, have the upside. Frolik, right here, to me, Chicago did really well. And Stan Bowman did exceptionally well. Well, pretty good in terms of what he gave up to get a talented player like that at 22 years old, as you said.
Does it strike you that, you know, Dale Tallon, you know, former Blackhawks front office general manager type, maybe fell in love with Skilly and overpaid for him?
I don't know about that. It's very possible. But it's two kind of questionable moves by Tallon, as you trade Frolik in the deal. He seems like, you know, and the goaltender, he seems like you give up a little bit much. And they're really not expensive. I don't understand they're talking about the cost factor there. Literally, there's very minimal difference in terms of money. Yeah. And also, you know, you just give up Grabner for nothing. The guy's got 20 goals.
Yeah, I mean,
after you traded for him in a first-round pick for Ballard, and then you just gave him up on waivers, and he went to the Islanders. He's got 20 or 21 goals now.
Yeah. Seems like Florida's in a little bit of a race to get rid of players because they have so many prospects, but they're getting rid of guys.
But they're getting rid of the guys they should be keeping.
Yeah, they should be keeping or getting more back. I agree. Frolik here, I don't even think it's close in this deal. I mean, this deal is the Frolik deal.
I agree.
And for Florida, they're one of those teams that they don't know if they're going to be trading or buying, but Florida every year is in this position where they're 2 points out of a playoff spot or whatever they are.
Down.
You
know,
They're seven points behind.
There you go. Put 5 and 2 together, and then you have 7 points. Yeah,
they don't have a chance.
They're sellers. So I mean, Matthew Sakaris from the Globe and Mail yesterday wrote about how the Canucks, Richie, you mentioned the Canucks' fourth line. Sakaris wrote that the Canucks might be going for Marty Reasoner.
Well, we talked about that last week. It's the thing, because he's got
who they tried to get last year. And that's true. I think that's the type of, And once again, Florida might want to keep a guy like Reasoner, but he's going to be a UFA.
If you're trading all these guys, you got to get rid of everybody.
Right. So Frolik, let's put it this way. If Chicago needs to plug Frolik on their second line because a guy like Bickle or Kopensky isn't working out.
More talented than both.
So it makes sense.
To me, anytime you can acquire the more talented of the players in a trade.
And he's cheap and young.
It seems like how long do you think it took Stan Bowman to say yes to this deal? 5 seconds?
Yeah.
10?
Probably.
I mean, who are you just because you're losing out on Huge Esseman, I mean, you're losing out on a guy with a good nickname. That's what you've given up in this trade, is a guy with a good nickname.
Skilly's a good player, Drew. He's going to be a good NHL player.
Yeah,
but he's not going to be. He doesn't have the upside that Frolik does.
That's right. That's why it doesn't make any
difference. I think Skilly's 20.
Well, Drew, it's funny that you mentioned nicknames because another good name was just a good name. Was Arlie Zalapsky, and a lot of people don't know that back in 1991-92 when he was traded, that's what the GM was thinking.
We could
trade Arlie Zalapsky, but he's got a...
Skilly's 23.
23, so he's actually a year older.
That's right, Frolik's
Richie
younger.
Richie wasn't letting me finish that joke.
That joke wasn't going anywhere.
It was going somewhere.
It was going straight down.
It was ending.
Along with your radio career, straight down. Let's go to break. When we come back...
I mean, Drew, let me quickly... Yeah. Frolik is a year younger than Skilly. He's played in the league a couple more years, been a successful NHL player, had, I think, 20 even-strength goals or something like that 2 years ago. He's talent there. That's a win for Stan Bowman, as far as I'm concerned.
That's a good trade for the Blackhawks. When we come back, it wouldn't be a week in the NHL if there weren't some dirty hits to talk about. We'll go over them. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday morning. You heard what the nice voiceover guy said. Give us a call, 780-1290. If you want to talk about hockey, area code 204-780-1290. Follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And be like Dickie in the Illegal Curve chat room. She just said meh. And join Remus and talk about hockey in the Illegal Curve chat room. Obviously, there's some strong conversation going on there this morning. It's not a week in the NHL without some dirty hits. And fortunately, Matt Cook was front and center as usual. Suspended four games or six games? I might have that wrong.
Four games, my friend.
Four games, I thought so. Suspended 4 games for his hit on Fedor Tuten. Just a blatant hit from behind.
That's a dirty hit.
Just as blatant as could be. You know, Fedor Tuten put himself in a vulnerable position to which he should take some responsibility. But Cook came in, guy could have paralyzed him, didn't think twice about it, just hit him right into the boards from behind.
In a league where Matt Cook needs, hits, basically he's going to end Mark Savard's career, knees Alexander Ovechkin.
Well, he did that last Sunday.
Yeah, hits Tuten from behind. 4 games, because the NHL likes to make sure, and the NHLPA likes to make sure, that they're protecting the money interest and not the actual star players. If this was David Stern, if this was Roger Goodell, the guy would be out for a long time. He would be dealing with meetings. And then, slap on the wrist. Matt Cook, that's fine. His style's fine. What do you think the Pittsburgh Penguins tell Matt Cook to do when he goes out and play? That's the way he's supposed to play. They don't want him to not play that way. But the league doesn't do anything about it. Four games for that hit. He's a repeat offender.
Somebody's going to knock him unconscious this year. Somebody will knock him unconscious. Somebody will tie Domi Ulf Samuelson, the guy, and there will be not a lick of sympathy going around.
And he's not even that good. I mean, he's a pretty good skater, and he can obviously hurry up on the forecheck there, and he doesn't have a bad shot. But he's just a replaceable third line winger.
Well, I think you're right, though. Matt Cook, right now, even though it's not like Matt Cook won't drop the gloves, but there's just so many guys. There's so many guys.
He's coming after him
right now that he will have to drop the gloves. But I think at this point, I've defended Matt Cook before. Maybe that's because he, scored me a couple points 2 years ago when the Penguins won the Cup in my playoff pool.
And you won that year, didn't you?
Yeah, well, you take Crosby, and you'll win when they win the Cup. But I think at this point, Matt Cook has become a player who's just comfortable with his dirty, too comfortable with his dirty style of play and his headhunting tactics. I mean, he's done this so many times, and he gets a 3 or 4 game suspension, Drew, and he knows he'll come back and do it right.
Like
the next
we speculated
night.
Earlier in the show, if that the new world order in the NHL is players policing themselves on the ice, and that's sort of what we've seen the last 2 weeks. We're speculating. We've seen that for the last 2 weeks. If that's the new world order, Matt Cook has to know, I'm going to get injured.
Penguins are a target right now.
The Penguins lead the NHL in fighting majors.
Not because of Matt Cook.
Not because of Matt Cook.
Well,
he's not the one fighting, Matt Cook, but people have to defend him. He is going to get injured. Somebody is going to knock him out.
Very possible. But you know, Drew, haven't we said that before? Like, I don't know.
His hit on Tuukka was dirty, but his hit on Ovechkin was dirtier.
What about the Mark Savard?
Well, of course. I'm talking about in the recent history.
But other ones. He's against Carolina. I mean, he's got a litany of hits.
He's a bum. But I think that was a game where he stuck his knee out blatantly to try and injure Ovechkin. You can't pretend that was anything other than attempt to. If he goes knee on knee with Ovechkin there.
Let me ask you this, Drew. What if Ovechkin tears his knee up and he's out for the season?
Well,
so then you've lost two of your league's best players because of some pieces.
Three. You've lost Malkin. You've lost.
I'm talking about because of Mark Savard.
Matt Cook. Yeah. But I mean, by the grace of God and probably inches, did Mark Savard not end Alex Ovechkin's season last week?
Yes.
Did Mark Savard, Matt Cook not end Alex Ovechkin's season?
They're slams with each other now because he basically is responsible for ending his career.
Well, I mean, Mark Savard, we'll talk about him.
Speculating, but most likely.
I hope he's ended his career in the sense that for Mark Savard's benefit, I don't think he should come back to the NHL. He's talking about memory. He's on long-term injured reserve, so he's gone for the rest of the season. He's talking about the memory loss he experiences. Yeah. He's talking about, constant headaches. Mark, it's not that you're listening, but if you happen to be or if somebody knows you, it's not worth it to come back.
Yeah, Savard is definitely the best example of the player who is doing it the right way. He's at the stage, he's almost at the Eric Lindros stage, where these aren't his first two concussions either. Mm-hmm. He's had concussions in the past that he's mentioned, and with Atlanta. And, I mean, you're right. He when you have those symptoms, it's scary, and he's at the point where there's, the next hit, you're basically, now you're...
You have a family to think about.
Permanently injure yourself.
I hope he does. I mean, I know it's hard for an athlete to give up. I mean, at least not that I know, because I'm certainly no athlete. But I imagine it's hard for an athlete to give up before they're ready to give up. But somebody's got. I mean, he's got to have some advice from somebody who's telling him, Mark, it's not worth your long term health. Continuing on, Anton Volchenkov, Rule 48, hit to the head, 3 games suspended for his hit on Zach Boychuk. Yeah. Just a.
That was he went to line up Boychuk, and he didn't jump. He didn't really lean in. What happened was he went to hit Boychuk. He kind of missed him.
Yeah.
He kind of stuck out his elbow, and Boychuk's head was lower, and Boychuk's a bigger guy, and Boychuk's not still. He's a young guy. He's not that big. And he hit him. It was dirty. I thought it was one of those dirty plays, 3-game suspensions. Volchenkov will learn from that and move forward. I don't think
he's not an injury.
He's a physical guy.
Yeah, but he's never had a reputation for trying to injure guys or run anybody.
He'll hit. He's old-fashioned the way that he plays a physical game in the back end. He'll run at a guy and make a hit, but that wasn't something. It was more of a reflex play than anything else.
That's right.
You see him play, I see.
He's a physical guy who's had a horrible year on New Jersey, just like every other player. Except maybe Eliash. This is probably actually good news for New Jersey because he won't be in the lineup because he's been awful. Who's also been awful for New Jersey, who I thought was going to be better, is Talander. Talander is...
That giveaway the other night.
Wow.
Right now.
They're
all getting better, though.
Jersey is one of the hottest teams in the league right now, but those two guys didn't turn out the way Lamoriello thought they were going to turn out.
When we come back from the break, we have Jeff from St. Boniface. He's on the line. We're going to talk. We'll talk to Jeff when we come back from the break. So we'll head there. And when we come back, Jeff, we'll take your call. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Top of the hour, 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. And before we move into news and notes...
You going to do your Larry King?
No. What's my Larry King?
Jeff and St. Boniface. Hello.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, am I going to get married and divorced 8 times? But I've actually met Larry King, but that's another topic for another day and time. Jeff from St. Boniface, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, guys.
Thanks for joining us this morning, Jeff.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You had said you had some comments about the Frolik trade. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, one of the things everyone's always talking about with trades like this is the upside of various guys. Mm-hmm. And as far as I'm concerned, that only goes so far, right? How many number one draft picks over the last 15, 20 years have had massive upside and gone absolutely nowhere? Traditionally, we see guys with high upside who have things kind of come naturally, somewhat like Frolik, mm-hmm. put in a terrible work ethic.
Yep.
A guy like Skilly, on the other hand, who's made it to the NHL, knows he's got to work hard to get in there. Now, Talon's just come from Chicago and has been listening to his scouts. Mm-hmm. So I think Skilly was probably in his plans for a while, you know, after the whole debacle with the RFA signings.
Yeah, yeah.
So he heads off to Florida and he says, oh, I can get this guy. And maybe Frolik's not the guy that the scouts are saying Florida really wants. Maybe the coach doesn't like him. There's any number of reasons we don't know behind the scenes. All we really see is what's produced on the ice. Skilly's not getting the same ice time that Frolik's getting for one reason or another. I mean, obviously in Chicago, you got guys right. like Taves and Sharp and so forth that are going to be your top-line guys. But down in Florida, you're thinking, okay, I can get this guy. I liked him. I know what he brings to the table. He's gritty. He's going to play hard. Frolik, maybe he's a floater. Maybe he's a Kovalev kind of guy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think necessarily he's a Kovalev kind of guy. I think he's one of those guys who he is bigger and he looks like he's sometimes lazy when I think he's not. I think it goes both ways, though, Jeff. And I think that this is the thing. I mean, Talon goes there, brings some of his guys into Florida, and he has, you know, his scouts say Skilly can do this. At the same time, Chicago's guys probably say he can do this, but he's probably limited. Here's our ability to get a guy with more offensive, you know, upside, not only upside, but offensive ability now, because Frolik right now is a better offensive player than Skilly, and the Hawks are trying to get a cheap offensive player to play with more talented players, and I think that's something else to take note of. You know, Frolik in Florida is playing with players who aren't of the same caliber as Kane, as Taves, and of Sharp, so I think that Skilly will be provided with an opportunity in Florida, but Frolik will also be provided with a very good opportunity in Chicago to play with more talented players. And maybe both fits are better. And you raise a good point. Maybe, you know, Peter DeBoer wants a harder working, you know, forward up there, mature forward who's played college, I think, was he at Ohio State or Wisconsin, I forget, for a few years.
Wisconsin.
Yeah, and he's ready to go. And then you have Frolik who can throw him in there. And the truth is, Jeff, his best talent, Frolik, is passing. So if you put him with a guy like Kane, you could really, really, really see, you know, both games flourish.
Oh, that's a definite possibility. I definitely see that there's upsides for each. It's just one of the things, you know, as I'm listening to talk radio all the time, and it doesn't matter what sport we're talking about, mm-hmm. everybody's always talking about upside. And I think one of the things we fail to miss is what are the scouts telling these GMs and coaches right now, and ultimately, what direction are they trying to take it? I mean, you guys were talking about how Florida's always kind of in that bubble zone. They're always a few points out of the playoff, and they never really know what in the world they need to do. Well, one of the things I thought they've needed to do for a long time is get considerably tougher. They need some guys that can pound into the boards and drive them, into the next level and grab them some pucks. A guy like Skilly's going to do that. A guy like Frolik, you look at a guy with his size, mm-hmm. you know, and you think, you know, this could be, you know, your power forward, Brendan Shanahan, Todd Bertuzzi kind of guy. Somebody who can bang in a bunch of pucks. Somebody who could bang some bodies and doesn't bang any bodies. He just sits there.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jeff. Jeff, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Thanks for calling.
Bye. I think his point was, he talking about the Frolik there in terms of the hands or Skilly in terms of the hands there? I was confused.
I think he was saying Frolik
yes,
in terms of the hands.
Frolik is not maybe a natural. You know, he's got hands to score. He's a max kind of 30-goal scorer.
Yeah.
But he's got very good, as I said before, he's got very good passing skills. To me, this is the thing. You know, you talk about bringing in Jack Skilly. Jack Skilly doesn't have as good hands as Frolik does. And you talk about the overall ability of the team. You know, a team like Florida. A team like Florida can't score.
They need skillful players.
That's exactly right. You look at their scoring, and their power play has been dreadful this year. Just dreadful. And obviously, Frolik hasn't had a good year, and they come back as I think Jeff's onto something there as well. Peter DeBoer, I had grown tired of him.
That could very well be the case, and the truth is we don't know what the behind-the-scenes machinations are that lead to these kind of trades. But, you know, from a outsider's viewpoint...
Well, I heard a little bit of, you know, rumblings in terms of why Grabner was let go, and there's some attitude issues and some other things that were going on there. At the same time, maybe you know, what speaks louder?
Right, and, you know, Jeff's talking about upside, and in that case... They didn't underestimate. I'm talking about Florida now. They didn't underestimate Grabner's upside, Drew. They just made a mistake because he went to the Islanders.
Well, I think
it's clear that
I think there was a personality
talent clash
with regards to Grabner.
And he's a younger player. And, you know, these guys also do mature. You look at the Florida Panthers. They're 23rd in the National Hockey League in goals per game with 2.61. To me, when you're guys, when you're like that, you don't want to be trading guys, letting guys like Grabner and Frolik go. I know there are some issues maybe on the side, but guys like Grabner and Frolik with natural talent go for either nothing in Grabner's situation or a more of a rugged player who's got, you know, can put up respectable totals, maybe 15, 20 in Jack Skilly.
Let's move on to news and notes here in the NHL this week.
NHL news and notes.
Start with concussions like we always do. Sidney Crosby, lots of chatter this week, you know, no comeback anytime soon. They're now talking about March, maybe. We speculated last week that this might be an end-of-season thing. You know, Malkin's out. He's out for the year. He had his ACL surgery.
Now, Drew, hold on. When you say that, when you say Sidney Crosby might be out for the season, are you talking regular season or regular season and playoffs? Because I think he will be back by the playoffs.
Well, you're probably right.
I think it's dangerous to bring a guy in just for the playoffs, especially with a concussion, because the game is far more intense. People are far more ruthless in the playoffs, and then rightfully so.
Last week, we remember the news last week when we were on the air was Crosby's left the team and he's gone home or he's gone to see his parents or whatever.
Going home.
Thanks, Bob Cole. He's gone wherever he's gone. And we said last week that, you know, this seems like if he was close to coming back, right, he would be with the team.
Right.
And it's manifested itself this week that they're talking March. March quickly turns into April, especially when you're talking about concussions. You cannot rush him back. Unless he is 1,000% mm-hmm. clear, you cannot rush him back. And that's it's really, I mean, I know that as a hockey fan, I'm holding breath here. This frightens me.
The question also is, do you want to rush him back into a Pittsburgh team you mentioned without Malkin? And really, I mean, this
team isn't made.
Fleury's been good, and the defense is good. You know, if you do add another player in there who's an impact player, maybe if you throw Staal into the second line center role behind Crosby, if everybody's there, yeah, they could, and their numbers are good enough. Obviously, Malkin's a big factor in that. That they could certainly win a round or two. Do I think that they have? And I picked them for the Cup based on their original roster.
Sure.
To make it to the Cup final against Vancouver, and right now without Malkin, unless a significant player is brought in there, if they can't bring in a significant reinforcement, then I just think that Crosby should be shut down. Just there on the side of caution.
I agree with you on that one. And you can get your take on the Crosby situation. 780-1290, area code 204, 780-1290.
Hold on, I think Pittsburgh can win the Stanley Cup without Malkin and Crosby. Sorry, if Crosby comes back, I think they can win the Stanley Cup without Malkin.
And they need to have another player. Their wingers are terrible.
Oh, no, I agree, but they will make a move. But, I mean, without Crosby and Malkin. I just combined the two.
Crosby and Malkin.
Without Crosby and
Stills
Malkin,
and Nash,
no chance. I mean, without those two, there's no chance. But, I mean, I think this is really one of those situations where no one knows, and I don't think...
That's exactly right. Nobody knows.
My gut feeling is he'll come back with maybe 7 to 10 games left.
My gut feeling is that's he might be gone feeling. For the year, and they might be gone. He might be gone for the year because
that gut feeling. Is that what you act? Your educated feeling?
No, I don't know anything about concussions. The thing is, we don't know anything about concussions.
That's the problem.
One guy comes back from a concussion a week later. One guy never comes back. I mean, look, Matthew Lombardi isn't back yet from his concussion.
He had multiple concussions.
Yeah, I know.
Peter Mueller.
These guys have all had multiple concussions. Yeah. Don't think for a second when they say it's his first concussion. It really is his first concussion. How many undiagnosed concussions has he had in junior, in practice? Yeah. You never know. Yeah. You can get concussions by just a simple tap.
Picking up a pickle jar at a grocery supermarket. It happens.
I don't think that happens. But, you never know. Let's go to Vancouver where we've been talking about their defensive depth all year round and how great their defensive depth was. And the key word there is
timber.
Because, my God, have they lost a lot of men in the last couple weeks.
Uh-huh.
They lost Keith Ballard. He's out 3 to 4 weeks. Yeah. He hurt his knee.
Mm-hmm.
They lost Dan Hamhuis indefinitely with a concussion on that mm-hmm. Mein-Getzlaff hit. By the way, clean hit.
Yeah, that was clean hit. I didn't have an issue with that. He didn't jump. He hit him. I mean, just kind of, Hamhuis got thrown into the boards. I didn't have an issue with that hit.
No, it just so... I mean, if you want to take any issue with that, it's that the glass is so hard nowadays, it's like running into a concrete wall. It doesn't give it all,
mm-hmm.
which Don Cherry, to his credit, has been talking about for years now. But, I mean, Vancouver's down to... I mean, they've lost Alex Edler, they've lost Keith Ballard, they've lost Dan Hamhuis.
Edler's their number one guy, Hamhuis is their number two guy.
I mean, they've called up Sammy Salo from his rehab stint in Manitoba. You can't count on Sammy Salo to stay healthy for more than five minutes at a time.
Again, are you back to, because remember last year me ranting about this to Jason Botchford?
Yeah.
And we talked about it, and it ended up being their downfall.
I mean, let's pull up.
Are you back relying on Andrew Roberts?
No, he just retired.
Andrew Roberts retired?
Yeah.
Maybe catch that. Are you serious?
Yeah, Andrew, because he's been a healthy scratch for every game but two games this year. He's retired.
Andrew Albert's retired.
Blows my mind.
Well,
Hey. Well, he's been a healthy scratch for every game but two this year.
If my boy Nolan Baumgartner gets called up from Manitoba, I'm happy.
Yeah, but this is their defense
Tanev, and you're talking about Tanev and Rome, and all those guys are going to be coming up.
Here's their defense coming into tonight's game. They play Calgary tonight. Kevin Bieksa, Sammy Salo.
Kevin Bieksa, good puck mover. You know, he can be a top four defenseman. He can play in the power play. Good solid player. Good first pass.
How great is he that they didn't trade him? They were supposed to be trading him to Nashville all year round. Right. Kevin Bieksa and Sammy Salo. Okay. Christian Ehrhoff.
Ehrhoff's a great skater. Really good shot. Good offensive player. Lacks defensive ability.
Aaron Rome.
Yeah.
And Chris Tanev.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
That's
they're
going
to have to call someone up.
Lee Sweat's injured.
Yeah, I know.
He just broke his foot in practice.
I know that one I know.
They're going to have to call up Nolan Baumgartner.
I saw you tweeted that.
Well, he's played on the Canucks before, and he's obviously played in the NHL drafted by the Capitals.
Yeah, he makes a good point there. I mean,
he should be called up. He's a veteran. You need a veteran up there. Right.
Sorry, I apologize. Andrew Peters retired.
Yeah.
Andrew Peters retired, not Andrew Albert.
I got the NHLPA email from our guy there, the NHLPA.
My apologies.
Telling me Andrew Albert's retired. I'm like, what? I missed Andrew Albert's retired.
That must have been yesterday.
You threw me off.
Sorry. My bad. I read it too quickly. I got too excited.
Hold on. Andrew Albert. What are you talking about?
Thank you. Andrew Alberts, defenseman.
This has just become Drew Gate.
Yeah,
Andrew Alberts Gate.
Okay, no, Andrew Alberts, again, guys, if you're relying on guys like Andrew Alberts, back to my original point, if you're relying on guys like Andrew Alberts and Aaron Rome, it's going to be your downfall because we talk about matchups. Now, remember, the playoffs start in April, not now. But the issue of Edler coming back is obviously a concern. Ham, who's with a concussion, you never know. Ballard will be back. So yes. Their top four, but losing two of those guys, especially the two who are the best two, Hamhuis and Edler, the matchups become a problem. Your first, you know, you can throw the Bieksa and you can throw Salo out there against a top line, for example. You know, they're both right side guys, but you throw them out, you know, throw one of them out there against a top line, and then the other guy out there against the second line. You know, who's on your left side? Who's flanking? You know, are you with Ehrhoff? Not great defensively. You know, Albert can't skate well enough to play in the National Hockey League. Aaron Rome just doesn't do everything. No, he's not good enough puck mover. He's not a good enough player to be anything more than a sixth defenseman at most. So you're matching up guys, and we talked about it last year. Look at San Jose's line. If you're going to match up somebody against Pavelski, because you're going to line somebody up against Thornton, your best player, your best defenseman, and you're going to line somebody up against Pavelski. Well, there, what's going to happen there? You're going to have a weakness. How are you going to handle the Couture's and Klo lines if you're already having trouble handling the Thornton line?
You're not going to.
It's a matchup-based game. Even an Anaheim team. I was thinking about that the other day. Anaheim were to draw Vancouver. Who's handling the Getzlaff line, first of all? Because Nicholas Lidstrom can't handle it.
And if Nicholas Lidstrom can't handle it, you know that's a good line.
What about the second line, the way Teemu Selänne's playing? It's a matchup game. And Vancouver right now is
Koivu in trouble. Yesterday was on fire for Anaheim. I mean, Anaheim is running, you know, it's hard to match up against those teams that are, you know, that run two or three lines.
You have to be able
deep.
To match up against two top lines.
And it's not, and
they can if they're healthy.
When they were healthy, they could.
And they still might be able to.
But it depends on the health. It depends how they come back and when they come back. And the truth is, with Edler and Hamhuis, we both really don't know. Before we go to break, you know, Daniel Alfredsson out indefinitely with a back injury for Ottawa.
That helps the team. They want to get the first overall pick in reality, and their season's over in any way, so who cares?
They're tanking. They have to tank.
It's fine.
They have to tank.
No, and then very quickly, because God help us as the entire hockey community spent enough time on this, Phil Kessel versus Ron Wilson from earlier in the week.
It's frustration, and it's we're in a world of Twitter and all the media overreaction. Kessel was frustrated. Wilson was frustrated. It's over.
It's unreal how big of a non-story this was.
You know, and the talk about communication... I think people have this idea that these coaches are communicating with the players 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, when in actuality, they're not. Oftentimes, they communicate through the assistant coaches or whatever else. But, you know, the concept of a player or a coach and a player sitting down, you know, every day to talk about their pros and cons just doesn't exist.
Yeah, but in this day and age of Twitter where everything is instant, also time seems to – nobody has enough time in the day. Coaches and players and management, they don't have time to talk for 15 minutes
about every single
individually. I mean, you might get a one-on-one.
I don't think this was a media creation, though. I think this is a case of Kessel made his points, and he probably spoke when he shouldn't have because he was emotional he was in the
Kessel
heat of the moment.
Kessel started it.
I don't think this was
a media creation, though. It was just a boring story, in my opinion.
A shot at a coach's back, and then it was obviously because there's 3,000 media members in Toronto. They go ask him all the questions about it. You know, do you want to get traded? Do you want to, you know... Because you could maybe take
he
from his comments.
He didn't have to say what he did.
But he's frustrated, Drew. He's a goal scorer who's not scoring goals. And Phil Kessel is exactly what he was when they acquired him. This is one of my biggest beefs. Stop trying to make the players you acquire into something else.
Yep.
Well, or
score.
Phil Kessel is
Sidney
Crosby.
He's a shoot first player. He's not
Crosby.
A great passer. Exactly.
He never will be Crosby.
Stop trying. Oh, he hasn't gone 10 games without a goal. He's Phil Kessel. He's just going to keep shooting. He'll get his goals. But stop trying to make him into something you want him to be.
Let's go to break. We'll be back. Things we learned this week. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Still to come on this fine radio program, we have a busy second half of the show. Up next, next segment, Gabe Desjardins of BehindTheNetHockey.com, George Johnson of the Calgary Herald, Damian Cristadero of the St. Petersburg Times, and Scott Brown, Director of Corporate Communications and Hockey Operations for True North Sports and Entertainment.
We have four interviews coming up.
Boy, is that a mouthful.
Four interviews, Drew.
Four interviews. Well, wow. You come to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for the best interviews in the hockey world and analysis. And speaking about analysis, what better segue in for the time? It's now time for Six Things We Learned This Week.
Six Things We Learned This Week.
Ezzy, we'll start with you for six things this week. Are you ready?
I think so, yep.
Okay, good. Then, 20 seconds, talk about. No. Detroit Red Wing fans...
Are you Don Cox?
Was that his name?
Wayne Cox.
Wayne Cox. Damn.
Wayne Cox. Nice try, though. Good reference, though.
Like that?
I love the old Canadian game shows where they gave away, the grand prize was a washer and dryer.
I think it was usually a product from TFL.
Supermarket Sweep. Wasn't he on both of those?
No, different guys.
Two great shows I'm going to drop right now.
I'm gonna check
Kid
out.
Street
yeah.
and Bumper Stumpers.
Bumper Stumpers was actually clever.
Supermarket Sweep, great shows.
Supermarket Sweep, I don't know why they just didn't go down the aisle and scoop everything off into
That's
their shopping
cart. And the thing
cart.
Is, they would always focus on the specialty items when all you had to do the most. What's the most expensive thing and always will be? Meat, right? You go get like a huge cut of meat, and I didn't understand that. I'm with you. I would just fill up on the most expensive piece of meat. I mean,
was the host of that show Tino Monte?
Yes, it actually was.
Did you just Google that
now? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you didn't actually know that yourself.
I remember his name now.
Things and then bring them up as if you...
Yeah. Richard with his fraudulent Googling over there. Anyways.
Ezzy. Website for a list of Canadian game shows.
Ezzy, Detroit
Red... was great.
Detroit Red Wings...
They used to clap above their hands.
Yeah, I remember that.
Detroit Red Wings defenseman Jonathan Erickson has improved his game dramatically this year and has done an excellent job playing on the team's top four defensive line, filling in for the injured Brad Stewart.
Yeah, and Jonathan Erickson, no relation to the Sony Ericsson cell phone that I used to own. But, Jonathan Erickson stepped in. Brad Stewart's been out for a while now, and Jonathan Erickson stepped into the top four. And you know what? He's doing a great job. And, I mean, Erickson is a guy who... He's slowly come along. Last year was his first kind of full season in Detroit, if you want to call it that. But this year, I think he's got 14 points. His plus-minus is up, Richie. I think now he's at plus 10. But he's been doing a great job. Erickson's a big guy.
He's a converted forward.
Untapped offensive potential. A guy that, I think he's 26 right now. So he's kind of in, he's getting to the age where he's got to, establish himself as an everyday NHLer. And I think...
You can't make that back end unless you're like 26.
Yeah. And he's been really impressive. And I think he's not getting enough credit because Brad Stewart went down. He's the top four guy for them. And, Detroit really hasn't lost a step. Datsyuk's back. And this team is, they're getting ready for the playoffs.
They're exactly right. They're getting ready for the playoffs, and they're going to be a tough out come playoff time. Richard, if the New York Rangers are attempting to be a Final Four contender, they need to look to add a solid stay-at-home defender to their second defense pairing.
Yeah, Mark Stahl and Daniel Girardi can play against the top line. Girardi's, kind of reminds me of Jeff Bookaboom a bit in the way he plays, right-handed shot. Not as big and a better skater, but blocks shots, gets in the way. Mark Stahl is the best defenseman on that team, one of the best defensemen in the National Hockey League. He can move the puck. He takes away. He's so good with the stick and taking away gaps. That's a great number one pairing. That's good. The second pairing, though, was Michael Delzato, who reminds me a lot, actually, of Keith Yandel. That was going to be one of my three things, but I changed it. Michael Delzato's got a lot of offensive talent, but he needs to polish his defensive game. He might be being rushed a little bit right now, but he's got a lot of ability. He plays with Matt Gilroy. Very young combination, both offensively skilled. And then you got Mike Sauer and you got Ryan McDonough. There's too much youth on the back end, Drew, but never mind the youth, because if the youth can play, then that's fine. They need a guy who can be a stay-at-home defenseman. Too many of those guys are offensive in the way they play. Sometimes they make bad reads. You need to get a solid stay-at-home guy to play with, Delzato, or probably Gilroy, to be honest. Play with Gilroy in the second unit, and then you can throw Delzato in and out, and you have McDonough, and you have Sauer there. But unless you have that, I think that team could be is dangerous, because they have aggressiveness, good coaching, good goaltending. But right now, they're a first-round win, a possibility. and we talked about earlier, you know, to be a second round or even a third round, to have that possibility, you need to be able to add a solid state on defenseman, like a Chris Phillips. You know, somebody like that could very well help them. I mean, maybe they'll get in on the bidding because apparently Montreal and Boston, I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Rangers went in on that. And Phillips isn't a great skater, but the Rangers' back end doesn't lack for speed, so it might actually be a nice mix. But without that...
You don't think they're a little gun-shy about acquiring another Ottawa Senators defenseman?
Yeah.
Well, Richie, I wonder what the latest is as far as Wade Redden goes. I wonder if he's improved at all that they would consider bringing him up, or if it's still the salary's too high.
The cap ramifications
it's
are
too
just
high
impossible.
To bring him up. I mean... That's a guy that you've already got. That seems like a simple, like, in-house trade acquisition, really. But I have no idea if Wade Redden. I haven't followed him enough in the AHL this year. But I mean, that's a guy that at this point he is more of a stay-at-home guy. But
the problem is, it's actually a good point. But the problem is, of course, is you've adjusted your cap.
Cap is the problem. Ezzy, continuing on, Ilya Kovalchuk has turned his game around for the New Jersey Devils because he is starting to embrace the defensive aspect of his game and is shooting the puck more often.
That's right, Drew. And Kovalchuk now has two consecutive game-winning goals, which, you know, I mean, the Devils are not making the playoffs unless they go something like 21-6 to end the season.
Yeah, something ridiculous.
And they have been ridiculous lately. But Kovalchuk, it's good. It's just nice to see that Kovalchuk has at least salvaged something as far as this season goes. Because since Lemaire took over in late December, the whole team has improved. But, you know, Kovalchuk is actually starting to come back on defense. He's starting to back check a little bit. He's starting to actually play a full 60 minutes. And... You know, as far as Kovalchuk's offensive game goes, he's just shooting more. And the last two game winners that he scored, they've just been shots. Yeah, he's got one of the greatest shots. You know, I was thinking about this yesterday. Kovalchuk's release is sick. The only other guy that I think scares people with their release as much as Kovalchuk is probably Ovechkin, just because it's so quick. He's got so much speed, Kovalchuk. But it's great to see that he's at least starting to pick up some of those defensive responsibilities. And Lemaire... is getting him to do it, whereas McLean wasn't getting through to Kovalchuk.
Richard, Drew Stafford is finally coming into his own as a difference maker for the Buffalo Sabres at 25 years old.
You know, Drew, he can skate. He's a big body, bigger than people think. He's strong on the puck. He's got really good hands. He's got a good shot. He's got all those tools, and I've mentioned that on the show before. Watching him at UND when I was there, and he played with guys like Jonathan Taves, and I mean, he stood out, and so he's finally coming into his own. He's getting an opportunity, and he's making the best of it. Limited, you know, game so far because he's been hurt. Keep an eye out for him because I think he's got the potential to make this a lasting impression on the league here.
Real quickly for the last two here, as PK Subban continues to play a high risk style of defense for the Habs, and although it is conducive to his offensive talent, it often leads to multiple turnovers in his own end.
Yeah, you know what? I'm a huge PK Subban fan. I worry a little bit that he's getting too many minutes in Montreal because of the injuries they've had, and Wisniewski is back now, but he missed a couple of games. You know, Subban, it's high risk, high reward with him because. If you look at P.K. Subban out there, you can tell that P.K. Subban almost looks like he could be a forward, but he's still making a lot of mistakes in his own end playing with Hal Gill, and his high-risk style is just, it comes with a downside.
Richie, quickly, the Tampa Bay Lightning have to ensure they adjust to other teams' adjustments to their much-talked-about 1-3-1 style of play.
The league has had a chance to watch a video. It wasn't really used before in terms of the NHL. 1-3-1, the 1-4-check, kind of three guys along the red line and one guy back there. Teams are going to adjust to it. The coaches are smart. Lindy Ruff in Buffalo the other night made a really good adjustment to it and were really taking advantage of it. And, you know, some of the lack of speed on the back end there in Tampa. This is a league of adjustments. All pro sports are now. So let's see how they adjust to that because if they don't, they're going to be in trouble.
Let's go to break after that. When we come back, Gabe Desjardins of BehindTheNetHockey.com. He's going to join us for the Statistically Speaking segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.